today, we're looking at a number of issues before we delve even deeper into what was raised during Democracy Now. Now, here's the thing. Aren't you smiling out there, you Law of the Land listeners? Because you know Manuel Gomez. You know him because Crime and Punishment, the documentary film about NYPD still using quotas. We here, I brought you that topic last year when I attended the Sundance Film Festival, this time last year, and brought back with me news about this documentary, Crime and Punishment. Manuel Gomez was on this program in February. He's been there in March. And guess what? I had already planned to have him on my program today. And he's not talking just about that documentary film, Crime and Punishment, that's been nominated for an Oscar. He's going to be talking about what has happened since then. This is the update. Remember, he wanted a board created through New York Assembly. This board, this oversight body, was going to watch prosecutors. Prosecutorial misconduct is out of control. And there is nothing to stop prosecutors when they have stepped over the line. And just like police officers, professors, dog catchers, there are bad folks in every occupation. However, in these other occupations, there is some oversight body for prosecutors who have control over life and death. They are making decisions whether or not to bring a case, how long they're going to hold somebody, should there be bail, all of these things. They're requesting the judge, and the judge listens to them most of the time. So someone is held over because they're seen as a threat. Someone is charged with particular crimes because a prosecutor says, I'm going to charge this person with these crimes. And they may then, you know, throw 5-6 of them out of the 10 off the list. But if you have this list of charges, then it's more likely you're going to be held over at Rikers, where awful things can happen to you. Now, remember, you're accused of doing something. You haven't been convicted yet. But then being held at Rikers, you can't make bail. You lose your job. You lose your apartment. You could lose your children. You're not there to take care of them. You lose your home. You lose all these things, and it's the hand of the prosecutor. This prosecutor, say, decides they're going to take forever to bring the case up to trial. Every time they bring it to trial, it's continued. Oh, judge, I've had this problem. Read the New York Times articles about the Bronx, and you will see the delays, the continuances, the anguish. And yes, there are bad apples in those groups who are being prosecuted. Don't get me wrong. Some folks deserve a 5 to 10 year time out. Some folks deserve a lot of psychological help. Some people are in the throes of addiction. There are many reasons, complicated reasons, but it falls back again on race and poverty. And the ability to navigate this system comes down to those who know it best, defense counsel and the prosecutors. But check this out, please, my listeners. The prosecutors have the police department. They have the power of the government. And they have no oversight outside of their boss and perhaps the judge. But let's now see what happened with that. Remember, I brought Manuel Gomez to you to talk about the whole idea of prosecutorial oversight for misconduct. Because if one is found later on to have been prosecuted and found guilty, because the jury is going to say, of course, we're starting from the standpoint of this person obviously must have done something wrong or they wouldn't be in court in the first place. So therefore, let's start looking at how the evidence fits this crime. They're not thinking, why did this prosecutor even bring this person in? This couldn't be something that prosecutors trying to get promoted, trying to make this case into something that will make their name. There are so many things that go into prosecuting a case. And for those prosecutors who are listening, you know the bad apple in the group, the same way we talk about any occupation. You know the plumber who's cheating the customer, you plumbers out there. You know the construction sites where things are being stolen for you construction workers. You know who the bad apples are. You prosecutors know. And you sit back and let people go to prison. Now this person comes out. They're exonerated, say, through the Innocence Project. Evidence is found later. What happens to the prosecutor after this person's life has been nearly destroyed by incarceration? Nothing. Nothing. Because the prosecutors, for the most part, aren't out anymore for justice. They're out for the win. They're out to get the verdict. They've put time, money, and energy into that case, and they want to win it. Is everyone like that? No. But those prosecutors know who the bad apples are, and they know the people who have abused their power. And this isn't McDonald's. You put out a hamburger and you don't give the person their correct order. Then they get back to their job with the wrong order. I ordered a Big Mac and you gave me a filet of fish. That's not the same thing, my brothers and sisters. People's lives are destroyed. They don't see their children grow up. They come back broken. And they may get their freedom, fine. Most cases, they get no money for the time they've lost. There's no way to recoup life. Those years are gone. And yet, what happens to the prosecutor? Nothing. The U.S. Supreme Court has ruled on these issues, and unless it's something as blatant as the prosecutor using racial slurs and striking people from the jury in order to get the prosecution, because they knew if they had an all-white jury, there'd be an increased chance of conviction. That case, that one case last year, how often does that happen? It doesn't. How often do you have the evidence of intent? You don't, because everything is done in secret. And I'll give you this last example, and it goes back to Staten Island, goes back to Ferguson, Missouri, and that's prosecutorial control of whether or not the evidence that's going to be presented to the grand jury in a civilian-involved police shooting, when a police officer shoots a civilian, takes their life, or injures them, the prosecutor is supposed to then bring evidence if they want to go through the grand jury process, which is within the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution, but they can also decide just to bring charges. But they 99.9% of the time go through the grand jury process. And as we saw with the Ferguson, Missouri case and what happened in Eric Garner's case, Eric Garner's in that case, the prosecutor was supposed to be on the side of Eric Garner. But because these prosecutors work so closely with police officers, they're on the side of the officer because they have to use these officers for all of the other cases. So therefore, and these are the words that came out of Ferguson as well as out of Staten Island in those two cases. They said, well, we were trying to be neutral. Your title is prosecutor. You're not neutral when you're prosecuting civilians. Why would you be neutral as a prosecutor when it's a police officer who is the defendant? You see there the unfairness. And since grand jury proceedings are secret, they're held in secret, and people cannot discuss what happens in those grand jury proceedings, that prosecutor is then left to give any side of the story they want. Or what they do quite often, we've now realized, is just put a ton of evidence before this grand jury so that the grand jury is confused. Now, keep this in mind. Lawyers know they're supposed to have a story. You present your story to the jury, and then you guide them to what you want the result to be. Consider a prosecutor presenting a table of information lists upon lists, witness after witness. And then they say, okay, now, grand jury, you just make up your mind. This is the same prosecutor, as we know, they say, who can, you know, get an indictment for a ham sandwich because they can present as little or more evidence, anything they want in there. And the other side, remember, in the grand jury proceeding, the other side is not represented. It's just the prosecutor to present the evidence there. And they can't get an indictment for most of the police cases. But if they had that same record of loss in getting indictments for civilian cases, they wouldn't have a job. But they don't mind failing when it comes to a police officer as a suspect. Police officer is one they want indicted. This is where we are. And Manuel Gomez, who was highlighted in that documentary film, Crime and Punishment, filmmaker Maine, has all of this information. And Manuel, who is a former NYPD officer, Manuel Gomez, who's a private detective, who has investigated other cases of police abuses, who has given his cell number on this program for you to call to help with your police abuse case. He's taken this even further, and he has actually put forward proposed legislation. And then what happened? Governor Cuomo signed the legislation into law, and now it's been defeated. You're going to learn more about that, but you know, this is what happens in the life of advocacy. You go forward, but without going forward, you'll only go backwards. But you go forward, step backwards, you go forward again. We're going to have Manuel Gomez right after this musical break. Here we are on WBAI, Law of the Land with Gloria J. Brown Marshall. I am she. And with me is Manuel Gomez. How wonderful it is to have you on. Good morning to you, Manuel.
Good morning, Gloria. It's great to be back on your show. Really happy to be here, especially with all the new and exciting developments and unfortunate developments that are going on currently right now.
Yes, and I don't know if you knew, but Democracy Now! Actually had Manny on to discuss Crime and Punishment earlier today without a plan between Amy Goodman and myself. We happen to be on the same track, but as I pointed out, we had you on in February and March of 2018 on the heels of Sundance to talk about Crime and Punishment, the NYPD's continued use of quotas, and the punishment of law enforcement. And then the extension of that was to have you on again to talk about prosecutorial misconduct and the fact that we have to trust these public servants, because that's what police officers are. Prosecutors are public service, just like the social workers who work in, you know, the protection of children, and just like those who are within city government and every aspect of city government, from the mayor to city council, they're all public servants. And so therefore, we pay their tax dollars, and we're not paying them to harm us. So
you're right.
Yeah, so now here we are with your proposed legislation that actually goes forward. So we're going to talk on two lines. One is dealing with the oversight board, and we want to just follow through. Tell us what happened with these two proposals you put forward, one being further along that's hit a wall and the other still in the process.
Well, right now, there was a bill called the Prosecutorial Misconduct Bill. It was actually signed into law approximately about a month ago by Governor Cuomo. And what happened was this bill was going to bring oversight over prosecutors who were falsifying cases. So, for an example, in the past year, there's been 224 cases that were overturned, and 86 of them were due to prosecutorial misconduct, where district attorneys were hiding evidence that proved somebody innocent, and they were holding back all the evidence and so that they could win the case. And this is what something I talked to you about before. You know, the film Crime and Punishment shows about ticket quotas and how it generates money, but what I've been addressing is not only the ticket quotas, but also the quotas within the prosecutor's office. And that quota is that they have a quota on how many cases they should win so that they can move up the ranks and get promotions and so forth. And this is the problem. We have 86 cases that were just overturned due to prosecutors hiding evidence.
And those are 86 cases that we know about. Just think about all the hundreds, perhaps thousands, over this time frame where you think about prosecutorial misconduct and the lack of oversight and the rumors around the office that so-and-so knows evidence or is pushing for, you know, someone to actually not just think about, take a deal. Because as I've heard prosecutors say, if you make me take this case to trial, I'm going to throw everything at you. So
I'm
telling you to take this deal now. It's the best you're going to get. And you have people who have, just like Khalif Browder, who lingered in Rikers because they were innocent and did not want to take the deal.
I mean, I have a case right now with a black minister's son, the name of Jaya Neal, who the prosecutor's office has the evidence showing him being innocent. And they've done everything to get the judge to hide their own evidence. I mean, this is what I'm talking about. And unfortunately, and I'm sad to say this, but now the prosecutorial misconduct bill, which was recently signed into law, which we were the first state in the entire United States to have this mechanism of protection against this type of corruption, has now been stopped. The prosecutors in the state of New York have sued New York State government, and now the governor has said that he squashed it, that he will not enact this law. So now they won the battle that they don't have oversight. You know, and this is something people don't realize, that the prosecutors have more power than the governor of New York State. They have more power than the president of the United States because they are untouchable. The law says they have immunity for what they do in court. So if you lie in court, you have immunity. If you hold back evidence proving someone innocent, you have immunity. This is the very destruction of our humanity. The Sixth Amendment is being flushed down the toilet. You're not even being allowed to present your own evidence that proves you're innocent.
And I want to stop there for, because you have stepped on the toes of those people who know this is true. And I know they take umbrage. You know, why are they, don't they know that we're helping the rape victim, the victim of child abuse, the little old lady whose purse is snatched, the crime victim, and there's a whole list of crimes. And yes, we do know this. And we want you to help us as civilians. We have no other choice but to put our case in your hands and have you decide whether or not you're going to be representing the people. And this is what's so great about New York. It's the people against the defendant. But you also know the U.S. Supreme Court has said that you must follow the law while you enforce the law.
That's true.
You must follow the law while you enforce the law. That is for police officers, that is for prosecutors. And when we stand there and we swear to uphold the law, which is what we do once we pass the bar and we become lawyers practicing before the court, we have to swear to uphold the law of the state and the U.S. Constitution. So when we're wrestling with these issues, we're not unaware of the great jobs that prosecutors are doing, some of them, and the immense pressure they have with the caseload. We know that from the standpoint of the public defender's office and defense counsel, and we know it from the side of the prosecutors, the district attorney's office. So let's just put that out there now. We're talking about exculpatory evidence.
That's right.
Exculpatory evidence is evidence that the prosecutor is supposed to hand over to the defense counsel, because exculpatory evidence is evidence that could prove one's innocence. If, for example, the prosecutor knows, because they have the resources of the government, they have the investigators that we pay taxes to pay them. They have those resources, and they're using those resources to get evidence. And when they gather the evidence and they find, oh, John Doe was in Puerto Rico during the time of the murder, they are supposed to hand that evidence over to the defense counsel. That's what we're talking about.
But you see, the problem is that they're not doing that. They're holding back the evidence so that they can have the win. Their job, and let's make this clear, the prosecutor's job and the police department's jobs nationwide are responsible for convicting the right person. And if during a trial you find out that this person is innocent, you're supposed to immediately dismiss the charges. That is the law, but that's not what happens. This is why this new agency, the new law for prosecutorial misconduct was enacted. Now that they sue the government, now that the law has been stopped. But you know what? I have some good news for your listeners. And that is, if you've seen the film Crime and Punishment, you saw me introduce a proposal called the Department of Civilian Justice. I am proud to say, and I'm saying this the first time on Law of the Land, that now I have a sponsor. This new department, which is going to bring oversight over the prosecutors, and not only bring oversight over them, but it's going to have the ability to fire their corruption, to fire from the top prosecutor to the person that washes the floors, to fire the top police chief to the person that is typing the letters. It will have ability to bring accountability where there is none statewide. Now I'm proud to say, in January 21st, I have an assembly member, Tali Fernandez, which will be announcing this new bill called the Department of Civilian Justice, which I and Frank Cervico collaborated on and wrote it. And the greatest privilege I've had on it is that now 95% of what I wrote is the actual bill, is the actual state bill going forward. But even better, Gloria, is that now, since the last time I spoke to you, I have other states now are going to adopt this template of a new agency to provide a mechanism of justice and relief to everyone. And now, I'm proud to say, is I'm meeting with Senator Moore in Connecticut. This coming week, on the 14th, I'm going to be meeting with her to discuss it being adopted in Connecticut. I'm meeting with Representative Charles Stallworth on Thursday to have it enacted in Connecticut. I've just met yesterday with Senator Cunningham in New Jersey, which is the majority whip, to have it enacted in New Jersey. And now I'm meeting with Horace Sena Tate from St. Louis, Missouri, and Senator Elena Parent from Atlanta, Georgia. So I got five states now, because of this film, Crime and Punishment, who are now looking at my proposal to provide a mechanism to more than 300 million people combined in those five states.
Thank you. I want that to sink into our listeners' minds. Let it sink in that here you heard first. Manuel Gomez, show us. Tell us, have us be privy to the work he was doing to protect us from prosecutorial misconduct. Because remember, once it's, you know, and when you see the documentary, if you've seen it already, you know that the police officers have pressure on them. They're being pimped by the city to bring in money. That's what this is about. They're using people who went into law enforcement in order to help people, because that's what most people went into law enforcement to do, to help people. And I know this for a fact, and you can call me naive if you want to, but I know that's why the officers I have interacted with went into law enforcement to help people. They get into law enforcement and the pressure is on them to bring money into the city by writing tickets and giving out summonses. And who are they going to give it to? The most vulnerable. The people of color, the poor, the people with mental illness, homeless, that's who they will give the tickets to again and again and again. And then you have law enforcement who go even further and they want to make the case. They want to bring in, and Manuel Gomez has told us about those young people and other vulnerable people who have been set up by, you know, there's a crime, we need somebody. Okay, that kid right there, get him. He's not going to have the money, the time. His people won't know. He's investigated those cases. Manuel Gomez is a private investigator, a former police officer, someone who had high-ranking military intelligence clearance. He's the one telling us now that then he took on, like a bulldog, if I can say that. Manuel took on prosecutorial misconduct. And then put forward the Department of Civilian Justice and On Law of the Land, my show, he now has told us five states are following his lead. Go, Manuel.
Yeah, and not only that, but I'm proud to say that I have a person named Aaron Moore. He's one of the NAACP CP members up in Peekskill, and he's got me now involved with the NAACP. Now the NAACP in New York State is backing me. I have other line organizations backing me. I have attorney Norman Siegel, former president of the ACLU, backing me. And we're all, and Serpico backing me. We're going to be going to Albany sometime in March to have a hearing where I'm inviting everyone. And again, I'm going to give you my cell number so you can call me, 347-867-6242, 347-867-6242. And I'm inviting the entire New York State to flood the Capitol so that we can show that we have to have this new agency, that now that they stopped, we have to have something that's going to provide a mechanism of relief where the county is none. And now they stopped the prosecutorial misconduct law because they said that it violated New York State statutes because it was letting the senators and the assembly pick who was going to be investigating the problem. Well, in my case now, I have, in this new Department of Civilian Justice bill that is coming out January 21st of this year, it lets the governor pick that. So now they have no loophole to stop it. But we all have to get together to demand senators, council members, representatives, Congress members, all of them back this proposal because no one in this land of America should be above the law. If the president has oversight, then how come our police commissioners don't? If the president has oversight, how come our prosecutors don't? You know, we have to give an ability. You know, Serpico said 20% of the cops are corrupt and 80% want to do the good thing. Now, listen to that. 80% want to do the good thing. The problem is that they're scared because they have no mechanism to or corruption to. And this was shown in the film of Serpico. But what has been done since then? We have four commissions. All they did was fire a bunch of bad people. And then guess what happened? Nothing. Nothing happened. It's still the same problem. And now I said I was tired of it. That's why I wrote this new bill. And that's why it's now being adopted by all these other states that are considering it. And God willing, next week I'll have Connecticut. And if I have that, then I'll have the whole tri-state covered. But my goal is the 50 states. And now I'm proud to say that the NAACP, their goal is the whole 50 states. So that the Sixth Amendment for a person's right to present evidence, for a person to be defended properly, will be protected. Because, again, if we don't have this, then the systematic mutilation of our humanity will continue. And that's not the oath I swore to protect. And I'm not going to stand here and tolerate that.
And he's not going to tolerate it. I'm mad and I'm not going to take it anymore. We'll be right back with Manuel Gomez after this musical break. And remember, we have to fight on behalf of those who are not in a position to fight for themselves. That is what Manuel is saying to us. You can't just sit back and let these things happen in this nation where there are over 2 million people who are incarcerated in our jails and prisons. And you may say, well, that's not me. They must have done something wrong. If we can't trust the prosecutor to say, oh, yes, that prosecutor would not just arrest my son, they would not just put my daughter behind bars, deny them bail. They would not just continue the case again and again and again. They wouldn't do this. Why would they do this? And Manuel has pointed out, for the win, because sometimes the arrogance of it all makes it insane in our criminal justice system. Oh, we'll be right back, and you will better understand what we're dealing with, and to understand also that when our prosecutor's office fails, the Constitution has failed. And on Law of the Land, we can ill afford not having our constitutional protections in place. That's our power. when we're in that police precinct, when we're waiting for trial, all we're wrapped in is the Constitution, the Sixth Amendment, as was pointed out. Without that, we're lost. God bless us, and God bless Manuel Gomez. And we are here with Manuel Gomez, and I am sure you are fired up out there, WBAI listeners, because I am. Manuel does this to me. Manuel said to me one time that he liked Nina Simone, and you know we have her in our intro and our outro. And Nina would be happy with you today, my brother. Here we are with a tool for our protection given to us by not a lawyer. Listen to this. Manuel Gomez is not a lawyer, and he is writing legislation, proposed legislation, that is actually getting passed. This is the empowerment we're talking about. We should not sit back like we're on a reality show program and we are helpless and there is nothing we can do. He decided there was something he was going to do, and this is the result. And we are not to sit back and just listen. We are to take action, because I say to anyone on my show, what do you want our listeners to do? And that's what I'm asking Manuel Gomez now. What do you want our listeners to do? And how should we then continue to follow what you're doing to know when this rally should take place?
Well, you know, first of all, I want to say again, thank you to you and WBAI. Since I've been on this show, I've had more than 4,000 people contact me from New York State alone due to listening to Law of the Land and asking for help. And all those 4,000, I want to say, please come with me in March. You have my number, 347-867-6242. But one more important thing I want to show, and I want to thank Gloria for pointing out, yes, I'm not a lawyer. Yes, I'm just a pissed-off American who decided to write law to correct an injustice from all the things that I experienced. This is what makes our country one of the most greatest countries in the world, is the First Amendment. It gives us the ability, the common, regular person, to petition the government to write a bill to correct injustices. So every American has the right to sit down, write a proposal to correct a certain problem within our system, and then present it as a bill. But you see, the problem is nowadays most people don't do that. And you need to go and start exercising your constitutional rights. This is what makes America great. And this is what our forefathers, the Sons of Liberty, which created this country, put this mechanism so that we can correct type of injustices, which is currently going on now. Again, I've solved over 99 cases in the past 3.5 years, and I freed every one of those people for false arrest. And out of those 99 cases, 46 of them were because of prosecutors hiding the evidence in Manhattan, in Nassau County, in Albany, in White Plains, in Valhalla. They hide the evidence and they get away with it. And the battles that I fight are real, all right? You know, people say, well, bad cops. I mean, there's a lot of good cops, and there's also a lot of good prosecutors. So I want to make that clear. I'm not against the police. I'm against corruption. I'm not against the prosecutors. I'm against corruption within the prosecutor's office, all right? And we have the ability as American citizens to write bills to correct that injustice. And I have done that not once, not twice, but 3 times. All right, I have another bill that I'm working on right now, and it's called the Clear Your Good Name Act and the Fresh Start, to clear people's names who were falsely arrested, all right, to clear their record. And, you know, I want to thank this film, Crime Plus Punishment, because since it's been aired on Hulu, it has shown this proposal, a solution. Now, it shows all the corruption that's filmed, because what you see in that film is real recordings of corruption, real videos of corruption, and there are no acting. Everything is 100% real. And this was one of the inspirations why I wrote this proposal, because I couldn't sleep at night having mothers call and cry and ask me for help when I know the kids are innocent. Like, you know, Gloria said, there are people that are out there that are guilty and belong in jail. But you want to know something? We should not be putting innocent people in jail just because we want to win a case.
We should not be putting innocent people in prison, in jail, because we want to win a case, because we want a promotion. And you heard this in the documentary film Crime Plus Punishment, but you've also heard police officers on WBAI, because we know police officers listen to this program, and thank you so much, because most of you are listening because you can't speak out for yourselves, and so you know that the things we're saying are true. We try to be reasonable on Law of the Land when it comes to these things. I try to investigate them. I try not to speak out of turn, but we also know that there are pressures on police officers to write those tickets, pressures on those people for the traffic stops, all the way to, you know, the parking tickets. You know, this is not about public safety. This is not about public safety. This is about promotion. This is about making money for the city. This is about ego and arrogance. If this was about protecting people, it would be a whole different argument. That is what makes this so insincerely horrific. And I know you probably don't know this, Manuel, but my favorite part of the First Amendment is that last line that people rarely speak. I can't believe you know it. In my world of students, and anyone who understands me knows, that last line of the First Amendment says that we have the right to petition the government for a redress of grievances.
That's right.
We have the right to say, redress, there's something wrong, we want a remedy. To petition the government for a redress of grievances. That's a quote I am telling. I've said this so many times to people. The whole idea between protest and being able to assemble and freedom of speech, all of that is there. But petition the government for a redress of grievances, that's clear cut. You're supposed to tell them where things are wrong, and they are supposed to then be told how to make it right or come up with their own solutions. They have not come up with a solution for this. And to have that the district attorneys come together and the association, now that's who sued to stop the enactment of the prosecutorial misconduct oversight, the District Attorneys Association of the State of New York. And going back to what was said, they said you can't have people from the other branch of government, because we have three branches in federal government. We know that: the executive, the president, the legislative, Congress, and the judicial. So what they were saying, their argument was that now we're going to have the executive branch, the governor, overstepping their bounds and having oversight for the judicial branch, because the prosecutors fall within the judicial branch of government. So they have to figure out how to have the prosecutors have oversight, but not have that oversight come directly through the governor's office. This is what's taking place. My question then becomes, well, where is the state attorney general? Why isn't state attorney general's office overseeing the prosecutors? There's got to be a way to work this out. As you pointed out, there's no way you can have oversight for anyone else. Even if you say the police commissioner, the mayor has the oversight of the police commissioner. The mayor has the right to fire the commissioner, because the mayor is the one who hires the police commissioner. So when you think about who would have oversight for the prosecutor's office except the other prosecutor, the district attorney, and over that district attorney, who has the oversight? It's supposed to be the people. If you don't like that district attorney, then you don't have them reelected. But for that four-year period, who has oversight? And then once again, who then makes the person whole? Who has fallen through the cracks of corruption by a prosecutor who's gone rogue? Who has that oversight? Who makes that person whole? I'll tell you who. Our tax dollars will. We will be the one making that person whole. And there are tens of millions of dollars paid out every year from our tax money in New York State, in New York City, hundreds of millions that are being paid out because of rogue officers and rogue prosecutors.
And, you know, and it's funny you said that, and I want to address that point you just made. Our budget every year has billions set aside because we know that people are going to sue because they're being falsely prosecuted by prosecutors and falsely arrested by cops. We have a budget for that. Listen how disgusting that is. We have a budget of billions of taxpayer dollars set aside to pay for corruption cases. And nothing's still being done. We're just paying for it. And there's something else I want to touch base on. I want everybody to know that if I can write a law and sit down and write a bill, so can you. And I'm going to tell you how, real simply, how you can exercise your God-given First Amendment right. You go to the New York Public Library like I did. I call it the Ghostbusters Library, the one on 42nd Street with the big lines, okay?
The main library, yes.
Yeah, and I went there, and I got thrown out of that library at least 30 times because I was the last guy reading books, and they would say, get a life, get out of here. Because I was in there reading how to write a bill, how to bring about a mechanism of justice, how to learn to have the words to create legislation.
Wow.
And that's all there. And any person can go in there. Now, I'm not telling you to Google, all right? Don't be one of these millennials that you got to Google everything. No, you got to sit down. You got to put in the time, read the books, read the cases, and it shows you how to do it. We have the how-to manual at that library. That's how I did it. You can do it. You don't have to be a lawyer. The forefathers of the Sons of Liberty of this country who wrote the Constitution weren't lawyers. They were pissed off Americans that said, we're not going to take this abuse. Why are Americans taking it now? That's not the oath I took as a United States Army officer. I swore to protect this country against foreign and domestic enemies, and now I'm fighting a domestic terrorist, and that's injustice. And the failing judicial system we have, trust me, I love this country as much as my mother, and I would die for it in a second. But I will not die for it in vain. I will make sure that we have the ability so that my children and your children can walk out there and get justice. It is our responsibility as Americans and as human beings to protect this mutilation of our humanity, which is currently ongoing. And it's not just New York State. It's nationwide. We are all besieged by the same injustice. Again, you can do it. And if you need help to write that bill, call me. I'll show you. Call me. We'll help you.
We're talking with Manuel Gomez. If you're not inspired, fired up, and ready to have 2019 be your year of activism, then maybe you need to be listening to another radio station. But I know you are because you're on WBAI here, Manuel, and this is 99.5 FM. This is WBAI.org. Here we inspire, we empower, we inform, and you have just done all of that. Thank you so much for joining us this time.
And thank you.
I know you will be back on my show, God willing, and as Hugh Hamilton used to say, in the creek don't rise. Manuel Gomez.
Thank you for everything, and I plan to come back when this bill gets passed in the law. In God's name, it will. Amen.
Amen, amen, and amen. This is Law of the Land with Gloria J. Brown Marshall. That was Manuel Gomez, private investigator, former NYPD officer, former military intelligence officer, and American citizen. For those of you who missed his number, 347-867-6242. 347-867-6242. He gave it to you. That's his cell number. On Law of the Land with Gloria J. Brown Marshall, we are here for you. That was a powerful, powerful conversation. You got to be privy to something that you're not going to get anywhere else. Become a BAI buddy. Say you did it for Manuel. Call, go online, WBAI.org. Find out how to be a BAI buddy for Law of the Land in the name of Manuel Gomez. He's doing all of that for you. He's not getting paid for it. All those days he spent in the library, that was his work that he felt he could do. And you can too. Qualified immunity is the immunity that protects prosecutors. There's got to be some way we as citizens can protect against this uprising, overshadowing, and harassment. There he is. He showed us how to do it. He's shown us. Let's follow. On Law of the Land, I want to remind you again about 2019 being the 400th anniversary of the arrival of Africans in the Jamestown colony. John Rolfe said 20 and odd Negroes arrived. It was August of 1619. They arrived in the colony of Virginia, and some of them went to the settlement of Jamestown. And that settlement and that colony became the cornerstone of America, for good or for bad. I'm working on a book about it. I became chair of the 400th commemoration for ASALH, A-S-A-L-H, ASALH.org. And I say this with pride because we're going into February, Black History Month. Carter G. Woodson, the same Carter G. Woodson who wrote the book, The Miseducation of the Negro. Some of us 21st century Negroes need to be reading that. And he also wrote many other things, but he is the founder, the believer in, and the impetus behind not just Black History Month, but the study of African American history. ASALH, ASALH.org. Become a part of the 400th by creating a 400th event. Go on that website, and if you have an event, submit it to the calendar, the National Calendar Events. That's what ASALH.org has created. I'm excited about the 400th and look forward to those events. And until then, my friends, inspired activists, advocates all, we are our brothers and sisters' keeper. I'll see you and my boon engineer, Michael G. Oh, I'll see you all on the radio.
It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me, yeah. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. A new life for me. Ooh, 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 ooh. And I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea, you know how I feel. River running free, you know how I feel. Blossom on a new day, it's a new life for me, and I'm feeling good. Dragonfly out in the sun, you know what I mean, don't you know? Butterflies all having fun, you know what I mean? Sleep in peace when day is done, that's what I mean. And this old world is a new world and a bold world for me. Yeah, yeah. Stars, when you shine, you know how I feel. Scent of the pine. It's a new day, it's a new life for me.
Hi, this is Tony Roberts. And you're listening to WBAI in New York, the voice of truth since 1960.
We've got our friends at CNN here. You guys love breaking news, and you did it. You broke it. I think what no one in this room wants to admit is that Trump has helped all of you. He couldn't sell steaks or vodka or water or college or ties or Eric, but he has helped you. He's helped you sell your papers and your books and your TV. You helped create this monster, and now you're profiting off of him.
We're with you, Michelle Wolf, but if corporate media has got you down, maybe you should try WBAI. We're listener-supported community radio, questioning the mainstream narratives trumpeted by the news profiteer.